I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. And along with saving the babies, mothers are being counseled with practical and spiritual advice to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. The goal is to save 70,000 by the end of the year, and they can't do it without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound that changes everything. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you on this brand new edition of the program. It's good to be with you here on American Family Radio. You can check out our website, afr.net, and you can also subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Just type in the name of the program, At the Core, and click the subscribe or the follow button. And the program will be queued up in your library each and every day. And we also have the American Family Radio app on your mobile device. You can download the AFR app for free, listen to live programming and podcast episodes at your convenience. All right, let's turn our attention to the scripture. Proverbs chapter 30 is where we are this week. Proverbs chapter 30, verses 5 and 6. Every word of God is tested. He is a shield to those who take refuge in him. Do not add to his words, or he will reprove you, and you will be proved a liar. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 5 and 6. Every word of God is tested. He is a shield to those who take refuge in him. Do not add to his words, or he will reprove you, and you will be proven a liar. That's Proverbs chapter 30, verses 5 and 6. Well, if you noticed, the last week you had Rick Green and you had re-airs of myself. If you were paying attention, if you're an avid listener, you picked up on that because I was in Boston. We took our first ever trip to Boston as a group. We had over 100 friends of the ministry there in Boston. My brother Wesley and I led the tour of Boston, Freedom Trail, Plymouth, Lexington, Concord, and the list goes on. We had an excellent trip. The first day, we got a little bit of that nor'easter, rain and wind. But once we got past the rain and the wind, we had a good final few days of sunshine and cool temperatures there in Boston. So we enjoyed our time with our listeners and our supporters there in Boston. And it was a very memorable trip. And for considering it was our first trip there, our inaugural trip, it went pretty smooth. No major delays or cancellations, etc. The government was shut down and is still shut down, but thankfully most of our sites were run by private groups, so that wasn't very much affected either. So good trip to Boston, and our next tours are of Israel and Greece. Those are back-to-back coming up in March of 2026, which is really just right around the corner. Registration is going to close on that in December. So if you've been delaying and waiting, I've actually talked to some of you who want to go to either Israel or Greece. That registration is going to close in December, so you'll want to go ahead and register for that before then. That's March 2026 tours of Israel and Greece. You can go over to wildmangroup.com to check out those dates and all the information about those. All right, jumping into the news, I want to cover this segment, and then we have some guests coming up in the second and the third. The Democrats are still demanding billions, hundreds of billions of spending of their priority wish list items in order to fund the government. And it's pure politics, even by the Democrats' own admission, this is pure politics. It's all about leverage and negotiating and seeing what they can get out of President Trump and the Republicans. And we're going on 3 weeks now of a government shutdown. There's some speculation that it's going to continue on through Thanksgiving. There's also some murmurs about the Democrats wanting to fund the government as soon as this week. So who knows where we'll land on that. I guess time will tell. But nonetheless, remember, this is all about, you know, health insurance for illegal immigrants. This is all about restoring Biden-era levels of spending. And the Democrats are rejecting the same budget that they already signed off on like over a dozen times. This is the same budget, same continuing resolution that they've already voted on and approved multiple times over the last several years. All of a sudden, they've got a problem with it. And this is all politics. Chuck Schumer is being run by the far left wing of his party. And it's all about politics. And if you don't believe me, let's listen to clip three. This is a Democrat politician admitting that this is really all just about what kind of leverage they can have over the government.
You heard the latest there from the speaker and others, what they're saying, and basically is, hey, same thing. If the Democrats voted for the clean CR, we could open it up and discuss and negotiate from there. Why is that not something that the Democrats are open to right now?
Well, we lose our leverage right at that point. And thus far this year, Republicans have governed in a purely partisan one-party rule without talking to us or including us in anything. And look, they got the votes to do that. I guess that's what their power grants them the ability to do. But in so doing, they've destroyed any sort of sense, certainly on the Democratic side, that we're going to be dealt with in good faith. So they need our votes to continue. Now is the time when we actually have leverage to have that conversation and at least give us something other than a vague future promise.
So that's Representative Adam Smith of Washington State, far left Democrat. But he admits there that if they vote to fund the government, they quote, and these are his words, they quote, lose their leverage. Technically, he said lose our leverage, but nonetheless, this is the Democrats. This is like exhibit A of the fact that the Democrats don't really have anything to run on. They are the oppose and the obstruct party. And they whine and complain about, well, the Republicans are pushing through their agenda. Well, folks, this is what happens when you win elections. And if we want to quote Obama, we will. I think it's a good time for that. Quote, elections have consequences. That's what Obama said when they were in charge. And the last time I checked in the history books, Joe Biden and the Democrats jammed through their agenda when they were in charge. And as a matter of fact, if we want to throw some shade on the Republicans, which I'm not against, Republicans actually helped Joe Biden pass his agenda. I believe it was the Inflation Reduction Act, which was a farce. The Inflation Reduction Act that made inflation worse, Republicans voted for it. Republicans, in name only, voted for the Biden agenda. Biden had bipartisan support for his left-wing, inflation-inducing legislation. And Republicans get control of Congress and the White House, and they get one bill, the one big beautiful bill, They get one piece of legislation in a 12-month period, and the Democrats just can't believe it. I can't believe President Trump got one piece of legislation through the finish line this year. Now, I will say, the Democrats genuinely do feel threatened. I don't doubt that. They do feel threatened. Why? Because President Trump is serious about fulfilling his campaign promises. And he is carrying out mass levels of deportation. The southern border is effectively shut down. Zero catch and release. Literally zero catch and release. He's cutting peace deals every other week with Israel and Gaza to be the latest. The economy is still recovering from Biden's damage that he did to it. The tax credits have been made permanent. The Trump 2017 tax bill has been made permanent. And we could go through tons of other good things that President Trump and his administration are working on. But Democrats don't have anything to run on. They don't have anything to run on. I mean, they are the party of obstructionist and anything that is against Trump, they're in favor of. And they've even become basically the party of illegal immigration, the party of illegal immigrants, the party of Antifa, the party of being pro-Hamas and anti-Israel on every front. And so that's what this is all about. And Democrats don't really have anything to run on. They run on being against Trump. And I don't know what they're going to do when President Trump's done. I guess they'll move on to J.D. Vance or somebody else. But let's listen to this. This is going to be clip one. But if you don't believe that the Democrats are wanting to fight to fund these left-wing programs at the expense of, by the way, at the expense of their very own constituents— let's listen to this clip. This is going to be clip one, talking about the programs that are in jeopardy because the Democrats won't fund the government. Clip one.
The government shutdown could mean a federal program that provides food assistance to low-income mothers and children could run out of money in days. Sources tell CNN White House Budget Chief Russ Vogt warned House Republicans yesterday it could happen by next week. The most recent government data shows that nearly 7 million women, infants, and children were eligible, for WIC benefits.
Folks are really concerned about, in the long run, can they rely on this program to get their needs met? We know that for babies, WIC provides 100% of their nutritional needs, whether that's supporting their mom with lactation consulting if they're breastfeeding, or providing potentially medical specialty infant formula. So that could be a real crisis.
There you have it. That's a CNN report talking about some of the programs that are at stake if this government shutdown continues. And guess how much the Democrats care? Effectively zero. They don't care. And these are the people that the Democrats claim to care about the most, right? The most vulnerable among us. Unless you're an unborn baby in the womb, then that doesn't apply. But Democrats claim to kind of be the party of the impoverished, the party of the minority, right? The party of the permanent victim. This is all cultural Marxism 101. But here you have low income moms and children that mostly reside, not all, but mostly reside statistically in urban America, Democrat strongholds, inner city poverty. And these programs, such as the WIC program that many of you have probably heard about, that program itself is in jeopardy because the government is literally running out of money. They can't print more money. They can't authorize more money without Congress. So they're having to pick and choose which government programs to fund. And many of the government employees missed their first paycheck this past week. And for some of the, you know, government agencies, I'm not very sad about that. But when you're talking about essential government services such as the military and other agencies, Department of Homeland Security, this is a big deal. This is a big deal. But the Democrats don't care. That's my point. My point in all of this is that for the sake of getting health insurance for non-citizens, people who are in the country illegally, for the sake of getting them Medicare, or Medicaid rather, coverage expanded for another 6 months, another 12 months, Democrats are willing to make sure that the military doesn't get paid, Department of Homeland Security doesn't get paid, all other federal agencies don't get paid. Now, they'll get back pay when the government opens, but they're not getting paid right now. That's the point. And honestly, there's no sign of the Democrats getting on board with reopening the government. Now, their quote, no kings riot or no kings protest that they had over the weekend, that's here and gone. And there was some word that, hey, let's get through this protest and let's, you know, go into the protest acting like we're the big bad Democrat party. And then after the fact, we'll fund the government. We'll see. But something's got to give here. I mean, we can't go 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, go into January with no government open. We've got to have an open government. Democrats have to come along to get along. We'll be back.
Hey, my name is Wesley Wildman.
And I'm Walker Wildman.
And we're brothers, and our family have been leading tours to the land of the Bible for more than 30 years.
Coming up in March of 2026, we would love for you to join us for something very special, a Footsteps of Paul tour, a journey through Greece.
We'll walk exactly where the Apostle Paul walked, through Athens, ancient Corinth, Philippi, and Thessalonica.
You'll enjoy unforgettable experiences and meaningful fellowship with believers and with Wesley and Walker.
And we'll eat well, laugh a lot, and yes, eat well again. And most importantly, we will grow in our faith as the Bible comes alive before your eyes. You'll get to see the very things that we read about or that your pastor talks about in church.
The Footsteps of Paul Tour is March 17th through the 24th, 2026.
Register today at wildmangroup.com.
That's wildmangroup.com. We can't wait to see you there.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program here on American Family Radio. You know, just to put a bow on this whole government shutdown discussion, what you'll notice is and I don't want to minimize the people, employees, government employees that aren't getting paid. That's a big deal. And the security implications for our national security when you have, you know, government employees knowing they're not getting paid, calling in sick, et cetera, that could be very problematic. But there are several government agencies and departments that when they're shut down, nobody in America knows. And nobody in America's life is impacted by it. And I think that raises questions about the legitimacy and the solvency and the wisdom in keeping some of these government agencies running that number one, aren't constitutional, but number two, don't contribute to keeping America up and running. So the government shutdown in some ways highlights the bloated nature of the federal government. And the fact that many departments could just shutter their doors and America would move on, business as usual. And so that's another thing that's being highlighted here. All right, let's jump to our next guest. Jamie Brian Hall is with us, and Jamie is Director of Data Analysis over at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's also a fellow at the Life and Family Initiative over at EPPC as well. Jamie, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me on your show today. I really appreciate it.
Well, Jamie, I wanted to have you on to talk about the abortion pill, otherwise known as mifepristone, because the Health and Human Services Secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., announced in early October that the FDA was going to conduct basically a safety review of the abortion pill that is currently approved by the FDA and has been for some time. And then, like within a week after that, then the FDA comes out and announces an approval of a secondary abortion pill. or a secondary kind of authorization, if you will, to further expand the access to the abortion pill, which is very, very problematic. But nonetheless, Jamie, bring us up to speed on where we are with the FDA and mifepristone.
Right. The FDA just late last month, right before the government shutdown went into effect, actually posted the approval on the website showing that they're approving the second generic version of mifepristone. They had already approved one back in 2019. This is the second generic version. It's going to make abortion cheaper, which is, of course, not a good thing for those of us who are pro-life. With mifepristone in particular, that now accounts for about two-thirds of abortions in the United States. And our research at the Ethics and Public Policy Center shows that about 1 in 10 women who take mifepristone will experience a serious adverse event, like infection, hemorrhaging, sepsis, need a blood transfusion, show up at the ER for treatment for these serious complications, need to be in the hospital. It's just terrible for women. And rather than restricting access, at least in the short run, they've made it cheaper and easier for women to get this drug.
Jamie, President Trump has been in modern history the most pro-life president. That's not really debated. President Trump, through his team that he's assembled and through his policies that he's implemented, both first term and this term, in modern history is the most pro-life president. But with that being said, we knew RFK Jr. going into this wasn't pro-life. I mean, there was no really example of RFK Jr. being a staunch pro-life advocate, and conservatives kind of knew that going in, right? It was a concern. It wasn't a deal breaker because we knew that, hey, RFK Jr. said basically, I'm going to implement President Trump's agenda, which is a pro-life agenda. But here we have the FDA approving and expanding access to the abortion pill. So how do you make sense of this? What's your read on this as far as RFK Jr., the FDA, and then President Trump's policy positions?
Well, President Trump in his reelection campaign in 2024 said that he would leave the abortion pill on the market. The problem, the severe problem here is not only is it available in the states that legalized abortion, but it's available in the states where abortion is absolutely illegal because there aren't restrictions requiring even an in-person doctor visit in order to obtain mifepristone. So what we're saying is if you want the conservative states to actually be able to enforce their pro-life laws, you need to get this dangerous pill either off the market entirely, or at least make it so that the women who try to take it have to go to the doctor first and be checked to make sure that it's not going to hurt them. We know it's going to hurt the baby, but let's at least make sure the women are safe.
Let me ask you this. Once again, we're talking to Jamie Brian Hall, Director of Data Analysis over at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, EPPC. What process does the FDA have to go through to rescind a previous authorization? So President Biden further expanded the abortion pill under his administration, the FDA did. What process needs to happen here for the FDA to rescind that? Because I'm not even seeing word of that process having begun, other than maybe the fact that RFK Jr. said, hey, we're looking into this.
Yeah, they've said that they're going to conduct a review of the safety of mifepristone. The FDA has to evaluate any drug for both safety and efficacy. Our study, which we published April 28th at EPPC, showed that the abortion pill is not as safe as claimed, that you're getting serious adverse events in 10.93% of cases when the drug label is saying less than 0.5% of cases. Hmm. We're also showing that it fails twice as often as is said on the label either. So either on safety or efficacy, the drug does not do what the label says when it's prescribed for women in the real world. The FDA has complete jurisdiction over assessing safety and efficacy of drugs. They can put restrictions in place on how it can be dispensed, which is what we're calling for them to do at a minimum, if not take the drug off the market. That's up to the FDA. Commissioner McCary, Secretary Kennedy has said that he will defer to the White House on any major policy changes. So ultimately, it's probably going to be a decision made by President Trump.
Yeah, Jamie, this is a no-brainer. I mean, the fact that we're having to talk about this is disappointing as far as the Trump administration effectively not moving to rescind access to this dangerous abortion drug. I mean, this is just disappointing all the way around from a pro-life perspective and a policy perspective. With that being said, it's hypocritical, and I think I have the respect amongst the movement to say this, because I'm not under any circumstance never Trump or anti-Trump, very pro-Trump actually when you listen to the program, but to come out last week and expand IVF and basically say, hey, the government's going to help subsidize in vitro fertilization, which has major moral and ethical concerns that are not being addressed, by the way, because we have babies/embryos that are being discarded and frozen at scale by the millions. But then to say that's pro-life, we've got to have more babies, which I don't disagree with, that we got to have more babies. That's a population collapse is a major issue. But then to keep the abortion pill out there under Biden-era rules, it just seems hypocritical. I mean, the Trump administration is going to have to sync up their pro-life policy priorities to make them consistent.
Absolutely. And I think it's just a matter of getting the attention of the White House on all these issues. Thankfully, 51 Republican senators, everyone except for Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, sent a letter to the FDA and to the Department of Health and Human Services saying, hey, what's going on with this? Like, your decision on the generic version of mifepristone is completely inconsistent with your stated pro-life, pro-woman, pro-state concerns on this issue to allow the states to be able to regulate abortion. You've got to do something about mifepristone. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of getting the message through to all the right people in the administration. And thankfully the 51 Republican senators are on it.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jamie. To get 51 Republican senators to sign on to anything is impressive with, the different viewpoints you have within the Republican caucus over in the Senate. That's a big deal to have that many Republicans sign on to it. What are you guys looking at on the state level? Because obviously this is an FDA issue first and foremost, but then you get into this shipping of the abortion pill across state lines against state law in many instances.
Exactly.
So what are you guys looking at on that front as far as how to combat that?
Well, 22 Republican attorneys general, state attorneys general, sent a letter over also to HHS and the FDA back at the end of June, explaining their concerns and how that they need to have the in-person doctor visit at least at a minimum in order to be able to ensure the safety of women in their states. So they're on top of it. We've seen lawsuits filed. State of Louisiana now filing suit against HHS and the FDA, saying they can't enforce their laws under the current regime. You need to at least go back to in-person doctor visits, if not put back in the entire safety protocol that was originally in place when the drug was approved in 2000 under Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. Not exactly a pro-life politician there, but he at least allowed for a regime of safety protocols that was looking out for the interests of women, that was requiring at least 3 in-person doctor visits. You had to take the pill in the office. So there was no possibility that someone was forcing a woman into it against her will, which has been the problem in so many of these instances here lately that we're hearing about, where women are being forced by a boyfriend, husband, their own mother, to take this drug against their own will and with tremendous risk to their own safety.
Yeah, you guys, as you mentioned, put out an excellent report in April. We'll link to that report on our show notes. But the horror stories are plentiful. And it's very sad when you read the testimony of women who've taken the abortion pill, and I'll spare the graphic details, but anybody who wants to do their own research, go read what these side effects and the primary effects, not just side effects, the primary effects of a forced miscarriage is what it is through the abortion pill. Very graphic, very terrible. Taking of innocent life for the child, harm to the mother, the emotional side of this and mental side and spiritual side, it's just all around a bad deal. And the government has no business signing off and furthermore expanding access to this dangerous abortion pill. Hey, Jamie, once again, we've been talking to Jamie Brian Hall, Director of Data Analysis over at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Jamie, we got about 30 seconds left. Tell our folks where they can read more about your work.
Well, our coalition, the Stop Harming Women Coalition, has a website, stopharmingwomen.org, that links to all of our studies that we've released so far. It has some testimonials from women who have been harmed by the abortion pill. It has links for those of you who'd like to send letters to the FDA, to HHS, to encourage them to act on this. Everything that you need from us is available at stopharmingwomen.org.
All right, stopharmingwomen.org. Keep it simple. Appreciate that, Jamie. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Great, thank you.
All right, that URL pretty much sums it up. Stop harming women and babies. You know, the Trump administration is going to have to step it up on this. This is absolutely absurd that you have Biden era radical pro-abortion baby killing policies in place. And the FDA is not moving near fast enough, or moving at all, under, as far as I'm concerned, to rescind these provisions. I mean, this should have been a day one, January 20, 12:01 p.m. East Coast time, policy priority. And even RFK Jr. being, quote, pro-abortion, I highly doubt he would even agree with these Biden-era policies that are still in place under the FDA. And the reason this is further disappointing, this is disappointing even more, is because the time it takes to rescind these rules. So here we are, you know, 9 to 10 months in to the Trump presidency, and this hasn't even begun. The rule rescission hasn't even begun. So we're talking months down the road, possibly a year, if this were to begin today, and it hasn't even begun that we're aware of, as far as the FDA rescinding these Biden-era rules. We're going to link to this Ethics and Public Policy Center report that was put out earlier this year on the dangers of the abortion pill. We'll link to that over in the show notes. That's terrible. It's terrible. And the Trump administration claims to be pro-life, and they're expanding IVF, which is a questionable procedure morally and ethically. We've talked about that before. So the Trump administration is claiming, hey, we're pro-life, we're pro-family, but let's keep the most radical abortion provisions in place over at the FDA. Completely hypocritical. We'll be back in a few.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you. We are live streaming the video over on Facebook, At the Core on Facebook, and on X as well, on the American Family Radio, the AFR handle on X. You can live stream the program there as well, the video. And as always, we're live streaming the audio over at AFR.net, AFR.net. Well, I want to jump to our next guest, who has been a guest of the program before. Julie Pickren is with us. Julie is a member of the Texas State Board of Education. She is serving District 7, one of the, if not the largest, district in the state of Texas. She can correct me on that if I'm wrong. Julie, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, Julie, you've been on the program before. You've done an AFA at Home episode with us talking about education in America. In many regards, Texas is leading the way on education in America from multiple vantage points. But one of the latest developments that you've been working on as a member of the Texas Board of Education is ensuring that true American history is being taught, not Marxist interpretations of American history or other versions of American history that undermine our founding principles, undermine our founding fathers, and create this sense of shame and embarrassment about being American. But tell us about this excellent development and this new implementation of history curriculum in the state of Texas.
Yes, I would love to. And I do. I have the honor of representing about 10,000 square miles of the great state of Texas, bigger than nine U.S. states. So I do represent a very large territory, and in my humble opinion, the very best parts of Texas. But yes, you know, Walker, whenever I was on the campaign trail in 2021, promised my constituents that we would end the radical Marxist critical race theory. But you can't just end it. If you just say that we're going to remove critical race theory or Marxist indoctrination out of education, if you just remove it, you're going to leave a vacuum. And so I promised my constituents that I would not only remove critical race theory, but I would work very hard to replace it with a pro-America, pro-Texas, robust, rich teaching, truthful teaching of U.S. history and Texas history. And so I am very proud and very thankful to God to say that I have now delivered on that promise to my 2.5 million constituents.
Julie, this curriculum, I've looked at kind of the nuts and bolts of the framework that you guys passed. I mean, this is the best of the best. This isn't a compromise with the Democrats or kind of a kind of good proposal, but this is true American history. I mean, this is coming from the best of the best when it comes to historians and those who understand America's founding and our founding principles. So tell us what it was like to pass this through the Board of Education. Did you guys get any pushback? What was the vote totals? What was the vote breakdown? Give us a little inside baseball on how this took place.
Yes, sir, I would love to, because, you know, we've talked before in the past. I've been on your show before, and I love to operate in a spirit of excellence. You know, whenever it comes to America First and the richness and the greatness of America, there's not really much compromise inside of me, because the compromise would be to, in my view, would be to adopt a lie or accept a lie or accept woke indoctrination. So I promised my constituents I wouldn't do that. And so God was very good, kind of the inside baseball story on this. You can imagine the resistance and the pushback on this, because Texas is such a large state. We have about 6 million children in public education, and we have such a robust education budget. It's about 52% of our state's budget. We're spending about $110 billion now on public education in the state of Texas. And, you know, our state is out of a great governance of our state. Our state is now, we don't operate in a deficit. We operate in surpluses. So what that means for education is that the national publishers for education materials for the country, they now want to cater to the state of Texas. They now want to, you know, cater to what we want, to our standards, because we're the largest now in public education servicing children, and we have the most amount of money. I mean, just blunt truth, Texas can pay our bills. We're not operating like California out of a massive deficit or other states that have a large population of school-aged children. We don't operate out of a deficit. If we write a contract with someone, we're going to pay our bill. So the publishers now are in a frame of mind now to work with the state of Texas. So this was really our opportunity to not compromise, to really teach history and civics in a true and honest way that teaches American exceptionalism, that teaches the greatness of America. And so that was the premise that at least I was operating from. But the way the Texas State Board of Education works is we take a preliminary vote kind of middle of the week, and then we take a final vote on Friday. Well, whenever we were discussing this framework, this really America First framework, on Wednesday, when we were taking our preliminary vote, while we were making amendments, while I was presenting amendments and making, you know, my stance for this framework, is when I was getting the text message that my dear friend Charlie Kirk had been shot. So you can imagine the emotions in the room. I think if you go back and look at the video, why I am laying out my my support for this framework and my support for even strengthening it further to make it more America First and teaching more American exceptionalism, you'll actually see in that video, you'll see tears coming down my face, not because I'm sad about this framework. I'm so proud of where we're moving in social studies, but just because I just received a text message that my dear friend Charlie Kirk had been shot. And so the room was rich with emotion at the moment. And so because of circumstances, because the other side was taking advantage of the loss and the hurt and the shock and the grief of the room, along with some moderate Republicans who did not want this. You know, we have moderate Republicans on the State Board of Education that fully wanted a global citizenship framework adopted. You know, they buy into the Common Core, to the National Common Core standards that are firmly focused on producing a global citizen, not a American citizen or a citizen of Texas, but focusing more on the globalization and the world cultures and world histories. But they were just fully taking advantage of the spirit in the room, because we had all just learned about Charlie, and they dropped a framework that nobody had ever seen. They dropped it. They proposed it as a substitution framework, kind of out of the blue. Nobody had ever seen it. There was a little bit of, like I said, a little not chaos, but just the room was offset because of Charlie. Like, we're all getting text messages and what have you. And so they took advantage of the situation and they passed a framework that no one had ever seen. And so to really drive this point home, this framework that was passed, that was based on global citizenry and based on turning our students in Texas into global citizens, I did not even see that framework until 24 hours after it passed. So this was like a Nancy Pelosi moment in the state of Texas. You need to pass it so you can read it. So I didn't even receive the framework until after 24 hours after it was passed. But then wonderful things happened. We had a day in between that preliminary vote that we lost that adopted a global first framework. And we had a Thursday day break in between till the final vote. And in that Thursday is when really everybody came together. Grassroots came together. Grassroots, I mean, thank you. We the people. If y'all, I'm sure you've heard me say this before, but the power is always with we the people. So we the people stood up. We the people in Texas stood up. And people started emailing and calling and really making a difference on these votes. Governor Abbott stepped in. Secretary McMahon, you know, she was very favorable of an America First framework. So really, a lot of people stepped in. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a lot of people stepped in on that Thursday, on that in-between day, and really stepped in to express their support of the framework that we did wind up passing on Friday. But really, what moved the needle was just, you know, moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas, aunts and uncles. You know, it was the power of we the people, making the phone calls, emailing all of the State Board of Education members and saying, we don't want our children, we don't want our grandchildren to be educated on the sovereignty of the United Nations, on the sovereignty of being a government that's not representative of America, that negates America's sovereignty and Texas sovereignty as a state. We don't want that. We want our children to understand U.S. history and Texas history, and we want our children to understand great U.S. civics and what it means to have God-given unalienable rights. So really, we the people stepped up, and I am so thankful to God that we won the final vote on Friday.
Yeah, that's excellent, Julie. You guys are leading the charge over there, and other states need to adopt this similar framework. I mean, it's really the way to restore true history in America's classrooms. And this is a blow to those who have tried and successfully, in many regards, rewritten America's history. I mean, this is really a major defeat for the left, because they want to hijack American history. They want to teach children, young people, to be ashamed of America, that America was founded by a bunch of racist, mean, bigoted men, and nothing can come from it. And we've all heard these left-wing talking points that are aimed at demoralizing our populace and creating really a voting block of people that hate the country and want to bring it down. That pretty much sums up the Democrat Party of 2025. But this is a direct assault on that left-wing movement. And we need other states, Julie, and speak to this. We've got about a couple minutes left. But speak to the need of other states to pick this up, because Texas has done it, but other states have to pick this up as well, because we need students all around this country learning America's true history.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And let me give you a great example. You know, Abraham Lincoln said, show me your education in one generation and I'll show you your government in the next generation, or roughly 20 years apart, right? Show me your education today and I'll show you your government 20 years. And the best example that we have of that right now is what's happening in New York City. So if you look back 20 years ago after 9/11, 2001, 2002, 2003, in that time frame, New York City was arguably the most patriotic city in America. I mean, New York City came together. It didn't matter if there was a D or an R, an I behind your name. It didn't matter. Everybody came together in New York City after 9/11 to say, you know what? We love America. America's worth fighting for. And bad people are going to pay for what they've done to our city and what they've done to our nation. And so you had one of the most patriotic cities about 20 years ago in New York City. Now, fast forward to today, 20 years later, exactly what Abraham Lincoln said. And now New York City is on the cusp of electing a communist to be the mayor of New York City. So you have to take a step back and say, how does that happen? How do you take one of the most patriotic cities in America, and 20 years later, they're now going to elect a communist as their mayor? Well, how that happens is the public education system, because what you've had in New York, like you've had in other cities around the country, in other states around the country, is you have had a public education system that has indoctrinated children to be global citizens, that have indoctrinated children to align with the UN's agenda on what a global citizen looks like. And we've seen coming out of the United Nations what that does look like. It looks like, you know, more government control, negating self-government, self-liberty, negating the unalienable rights given by God, but rights given by government. So what you have happening in New York City right now should be a wake-up call for every leader in every state across America to really get a hold of your education system, because you have people who are, you know, older Americans that are going, oh my goodness, I can't believe they're electing a communist. But then you have younger Americans who are going to be voting in this New York City mayoral election, who they're speaking the same language as the communist candidate, right? They're all speaking the same language. We're the ones in the back of the room going, what are you doing? That's a communist. But that's what happens when you have woke indoctrination in your public schools. And I just hope that everyone looks at what's happening in New York City as a beacon, as a flare in the sky to wake up and take your public education system back. and really start teaching the greatness of America, the beauty of America, and start teaching the harms of communism. You know, in the 20th century, there was almost 100 million people that lost their lives at the hands of communism. This is not a benevolent economic or government system. This is a system. The communist system tramples people. It tramples rights, and it tramples family, and it tramples people so that the elite stay in the ruling power and the ruling class. And so I just hope that people wake up and look at what's happening in New York City so that they can fix education in their states, to pass policies in education that promote the family, that promote patriotism, that promote the Old Testament and New Testament in education, and that teach the horrible effects of communism to children so that we don't have other cities that fall into this trap of electing a communist to be their city leadership.
Amen. Yeah, we need Americans to wake up, and Americans in Democrat strongholds need to wake up too, to your point. Hey, Julie, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Yes, sir. If I can just say one more thing, if your viewers will go to National Association of Christian Lawmakers, NACL, National Association of Christian Lawmakers, we have fantastic model policy for all 50 states to protect public education in your state.
Excellent.
So anyone that I can work with, I'm always available.
Thanks, Julie. That's Julie Pickren, Texas State Board of Education, District 7. Is where she serves. We appreciate their work leading the charge on education. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.